Like my colleague, I am appreciative of the work that he has done on this issue, and we have been talking about this for a number of weeks, and our staffs have been hammering out the details, and I think that this moment this morning, in fact, I'll be very candid, as I left my office, some members of my staff said, well, okay, good luck walking that plank. We'll see how it works out for you, because this is politically risky, what the senator and I are trying to do. And as I was riding over here on the tram to make this speech, I got a text message from one of my kids. And all of a sudden, it became very clear to me what this is like. This is like saying no when you're a parent. And it is so easy to say yes to your kids. When they want something, when they do something that you think is risky, the easiest thing in the world. They want money, when they want to have a new car, when they want to borrow your car, when they want to go spend the night at a friend's that you don't know very well, when they want to stay out later, when they want this, that, they want to go to the mall. It's so easy to say yes. Doesn't take a lot of time, makes them happy, you feel good. But there's always that voice in your head that says, if I'm going to be a good parent, sometimes it's more important to say no. Well, we have a bunch of people in Congress that have made a lifetime career of saying yes. I understand it. You know, we run for office around here. We want everyone to be happy with us. We want everyone to love us. We don't want to disappoint anyone. We don't want there to be controversy about the decisions we make. And so how do we avoid the controversy? We say yes. We say yes. And we've said yes and yes and yes and yes and yes and yes and yes until we find ourselves at this point in our history, where our unwillingness to say no, our unwillingness to embrace controversy and political risk has led us to an economic brink, a place where if we don't do something that's going to make some people angry, that's going to cause some negative ads to be run against us, that we really aren't doing our job as stewards. And that's all we are here. We're passing through. We aren't entitled to these jobs. We've borrowed these jobs. They belong to the American people. And we have a responsibility as stewards to say no now, to say no. Now, I remember when I used to tell my kids, it's so much easier for me to tell you yes. And they said, well, it's easier for you, easier for me. I said, the right thing to do is for me to say no. They said, well, that's not easier for us. And that's beginning to be what's happening around here. I've noticed some of my colleagues on the other side of the aisle, we're going to cut, 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 and now it's all bubbling up. All the people say, no, you can't cut our subsidy. No, you can't cut our subsidy. You can't cut the oil company's subsidy. You can't cut a farm program. You can't cut this. You can't cut that. Everyone is coming out of the woodwork to protect the spending that is embraced by our bad habit of saying yes. So that's why this bill is necessary. This is like telling Congress you've got to be better parents. And if you can't muster the courage to say no, these cuts are going to happen anyway. It's like a discipline for us. And I don't go here lightly. I don't go here without understanding the political risks involved. But I go here because I deeply believe that it is necessary for our country. We cannot get control of the deficit if we do not control spending. And let me talk for a minute about debt and deficit, because as I go out and talk to people, there are a lot of people that use those terms. In fact, they use them interchange, the two terms, and don't understand there's a big difference between the debt and the deficit. The deficit is like your monthly budget and not having enough money to come in to meet your monthly expenses. And we talk about the deficit on an annual basis. How much money is the government bringing in, and how much money is going out? And when more is going out than coming in, we have a deficit. Now, what happens to that deficit every year? It goes on our debt. It's like a family's mortgage. But instead of us paying down the mortgage every year, We keep adding to the mortgage every year. And that is why we now have a $1.4, $1.5 trillion deficit this year. We're going to spend that much more than we take in this year. And we have $14 trillion in debt. That's the long-term mortgage our country has right now that we owe someone for. We have to pay. So we have to get a hold of this debt. Now, I want to compliment the President of the United States because the short-term spending stuff is important. And I want to compliment Senator Sessions. He and I have worked on short-term spending caps for the last year, for over a year. But now it's time for us to look at long-term discipline and what we can do to get our country on a glide path where we no longer are precariously on the edge of not being the strongest economic power in the world. Our deficits are unsustainable, and our debt is out of control. This bill takes a very measured approach, gives us time to figure things out. It's not like the ridiculous proposal over in the House that we're going to cut $2.5 trillion this year. Anybody who thinks that's going to happen, I've got like a tutu you need to wear down the hall tomorrow. That is a ridiculous proposal. That's impossible to do. But this bill, this is possible and responsible. This puts us on a glide path to say to the American people that our spending is going to be capped at a certain percentage of our economic activity in this country. That is possible, and it is responsible, and we should do it. Now, who's to blame? Let's be honest about how we got here. The biggest factor in our deficits the last 2 years is our poor economy. I know, you would think it's the stimulus, you would think it's TARP, it's not. Political cheap shots, but not true. The biggest fiscal hole that we are facing is because of the poor economy. The biggest increase in spending in the last 2 years? Well, you would think it was the auto bailouts, or you would think it was a bank bailout, or you would think it was the stimulus, or it's not. You know what the biggest increase in spending was over the last 2 years? Unemployment benefits because of our bad economy. That was the biggest increase in spending over the last 2 years. Our fiscal hole has grown primarily because of a bad economy over the last 2 years. But there also have been bad decisions by both parties over the last decade. When Clinton left office, our debt, he may have been running a surplus in terms of the deficit, but our debt was $5.7 trillion. When Bush left office, he had doubled it. Went from $5.7 trillion to $10.6 trillion. And today, it is $14 trillion. Over the past decade, we've had two wars that we didn't bother to pay for, a brand new Medicare entitlement, brand spanking new, that wasn't means tested. We're buying Warren Buffett's prescription drugs. Go figure. Like we're busted and we're buying multi-hundred-million-dollar billionaires' prescription drugs, and we didn't bother to pay for it. And increases in discretionary spending by both parties that increased in our deficit and exceeded inflation. Now, I'm going to talk a minute about the boogeyman of the TARP and the stimulus. I am so sick of that being blamed. It is so wrong and factually incorrect. We have tax cuts that go on forever that have contributed to this. We have wars that we're fighting that contributed to this. We have entitlement programs that aren't paid for. But the stimulus was a one-time expenditure. It's not something that goes on. It has no tail. Anyone who understands economics and understands the balance sheet of the United States government knows this problem was not the stimulus. One-third of the stimulus was tax cuts. Last time I looked, unpaid-for tax cuts was the way of the world. One-third of the stimulus was tax cuts. And another third of it almost was unemployment benefits. That's not the problem. And TARP, let's be honest, it was a genius decision in many ways because it stabilized our financial sector and it has cost us a mere fraction of the money that was used on a temporary basis to make sure that our economy did not twist down the drain. as it was likely to do, had President Bush not intervened with his economic team to ask us on a bipartisan basis to do something that was in the best interest of our nation. Now, we can move on as to who's to blame, because now we have to talk about tomorrow's problems. And I am proud the president is dealing with short-term spending by his freeze. I'm proud that he is working on earmarks and all of the other things that are a symptom of the disease around here. But really, our challenge is long-term spending. In the long term, spending is going to drive the debt up even higher. Medicare and Medicaid cuts are going to double by 2021. Social Security is going to increase by 70% by 2021. Mr. President, I'd ask unanimous consent for 3 more minutes.
Without objection.
Thank you. We've got to look at those issues and make sure that on a bipartisan basis we do what's responsible. We've got to make sure these programs, Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security, are stable and secure for my children and their children. If we can't agree even on the modest measures like the 3-year discretionary spending cap that Senator Sessions and I have been pushing for over a year, I question whether we have the discipline to do the hard work. Getting control of spending is very, very hard. But we have to do it, and we have to do it now. The first and foremost thing we need to focus on is eliminating the waste and mismanagement. That's what drives Americans crazy. It drives people crazy that we're spending money on duplicative programs and we're not even checking to see if they work. It drives them crazy when the federal government runs huge deficits and we're paying out $55 billion in improper payments at Health and Human Services and $12 billion of improper payments by Treasury to people who don't even qualify. It drives Americans crazy when we don't make the reforms that our auditors recommend. The Defense Department has 1,200 suggestions that have been made by our government auditors about how I can manage its money and its programs better, and they have not acted on almost 1,200 of them. It drives people crazy we're running deficits when we have departments like the Agriculture Department and Homeland Security that get failing management grades for 8 straight years. And it drives people crazy when we're running deficits and we're passing appropriations bills with $15 billion worth of earmarks. I've been working hard to try to clean up all this waste. We've been working on contract management. I've never requested an earmark. I've voted against every omnibus appropriations bill that has come to the floor since I've been a senator. And I've worked hard for the last year with Senator Sessions to cap spending, and now I look forward to working hard with Senator Corker and many of my friends in the Republican Party to work on the Corker-McCaskill bill to put a cap long-term on spending in the federal government. As I say, this is a bold step. It has risks, and if this bill is distorted and twisted, it could cost me my Senate seat. Say that again. If this bill is distorted and twisted, it could cost me my Senate seat. But it's a price I'm willing to pay. It's a price I'm willing to pay for my country. And more importantly, it's a price I'm willing to pay for my grandchildren. Thank you, Mr. President. I yield the floor.